So we've been reading from Bhagavad Gita. Last night we began a little bit of a series on the 13th chapter describing nature, consciousness, and the enjoyer. Now this chapter is one of the most philosophical chapters in Bhagavad Gita. It's very difficult to penetrate the philosophy of this chapter. It's quite deep. But basically, we'll go over what we went over last night in summary, and then we'll continue on with verses 8 through 12, which will be the discussion point for this evening. Okay, so we'll begin. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, first verse. Arjuna uvacha prakritim purusham chaiva shatram shatra gya eva cha etad veditum icchami gyanam gyayam chikeshava. And Arjuna says, Oh my dear Krishna, I wish to know about prakriti, nature, purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. Krishna answers, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Sariram Konteya Shatram Itya Vidyate Etad Yo Veti Tam Prahu Shatram Gya Iti Tad Vidaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Next word, Kshetram Gyan Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Kshetru Chabharata Kshetra Kshetra Gyan Yor Gyanam Tad Yat Tad Gyanam Mata Mama. O descendant of Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies, and to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Text 4. Now please hear my description of this field of activity and how it is constituted. What are its changes? Whence it is produced? Who that knower of the field of activity is? And what his influences are? Text 5. That knowledge of the field of activities and the knower of activities is described by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in Vedanta Sutra with all reasoning as to cause and effect. Text 6 and 7. The five great elements, the false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of the activities and their interactions. So here Krishna is explaining that this, when he says field, we're talking about body. And the knower of the field is God, of the super soul. And we sometimes we call the living entity the enjoyer of the field. And that is, the living entity has this body. We are a body. We are a soul with a body. We are not a body with a soul. Our actual existence is spiritual. But we have a material body. And that material body is what is called our field of our activities. So here Krishna explains what is the body made up with and what are its influences and the interactions. So here he explains. And I'll read this purport. From all authoritative statements of the great sages, the Vedic hymns, and afferences of Vedanta Sutra, The components of this world can be understood as follows. First, there are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are the five great elements. Then there are false ego, the intelligence, and the unmanifested stage of the three modes of nature. Then there are the five senses for acquiring knowledge, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin. The five working senses, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. And above these senses, there is the mind, which is within, and which can be called the sense within. Therefore, including the mind, there are 11 senses altogether. Then there are the five objects of the senses, smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. Now the aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activity. If one makes an analytic study of these 24 subjects, then he can very well understand the field of activity. Then there are desire, hatred, happiness, and distress, which are the interactions of these elements, representations of the five great elements in the gross body. The living symptoms represented by consciousness and conviction, and the manifestation of the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. These subtle elements are included within the field of activities. The five elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of the false ego, technically called materialist conception, or tamasibhuti, intelligence and ignorance. This further represents the unmanifest stage of the three modes of material nature. The unmanifested modes of material nature are called pradhan. So you get the picture that you have the elements, 24, the interactions of these elements, which make up happiness, distress, hatred, desire. The aggregate, then you have the life symptoms, which are consciousness and conviction, and then the false ego, which is the manifestation of intelligence and ignorance. Real ego means to understand I am spirit soul, and any other designation that we may accept is called false ego. I am man, I am woman, I am black, I am white, I am Indian, I am old, I am young. This is all manifestations of the false ego. They have nothing to do with the soul. They're simply part of our existence within this material world. So, and then you take that subtle element of the false ego and bring it back to its original state, and then you have pradhan. So what is pradhan? It's the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. And so the unmanifest stage is just the stage before the creation occurs. Krishna glances over pradhan, agitates the three modes, and they start to manifest the different elements like that. So pradhan means the unmanifestation of the modes. Give you an example, it's like an egg. Pradhan, if you can visualize pradhan, it's an egg. And then when a chicken comes and sits on the egg, and then it becomes activated, and the baby chick comes out. So without the chicken, the egg is there, all the ingredients for life is there, but it's in an unmanifested form. So the three modes exist in unmanifested form, and then when Krishna glances over them, he activates them, and then the creation comes out, starting with the false ego in ignorance. Clear? Okay. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail and with their interactions should study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary is only given. So this is just a summary of the 24 elements. The body is the representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body which are six in number. The body is born, grows, stays, produces some byproducts, gradually dwindles, and then it dies. Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. However, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. So now we have to come to understand who is the knower of the field. So then we come to verse 8 through 12, which is our subject tonight. Amanditvam adambitvam ahimsam shantan arjuvam achayopasanam saucham stayam atmanvini graham indriyateshu vairagyam anahankar evacham jnanamittu jara vyadi dukha doshana darshanam ashakya anabhishyavgya putra dara viradishu nityam cha samatityavam istam nistapapatishu Maya chananya yogena bhaktir avyav vicharini vivikta desha sevitvam adatir jana samsadhi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartam darshanam etaj jnanam itam proktam ajnanam yo atam natta. So Krishna speaks. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment from detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and utterly devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Krishna gives the items of knowledge, which are 20 in number. So last night we began. Now these items of knowledge are not like the knowledge of the field of activities. These items get one out of the field of activities. So these 20 items are necessary in order to free oneself from the interaction of the field of activities, which is this body. So last night we began this, and we spoke about the first one. And the first one was, what was it?
Mm-hmm.
Humility. Okay. So we'll read that, and then we'll go on. Let me read the first part of the purport first to give, just to do it, to summarize again. Because this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field. But, actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mayi chananya yogena bhakti avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So, if one does not approach, or is not able to approach, the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. So, devotional service is the foremost and essential, and without that, the other 19 items have no real meaning. But if one takes the devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasyati Bhaktya Bhagavati Akinchana Suvaya Gunas Tatra Samasti Seisura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Okay. So then, the first item was humility. So we'll read that and then we'll go on. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to the body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are always very anxious to be famous for their religion. And consequently, sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As far as actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. So here Krishna gives, Prabhupada explains that you can understand how much you're progressing in devotional service by checking yourself against these 19 items. So the second item is nonviolence. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But actual nonviolence means not to put others in distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people, so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is nonviolence. Interesting definition of nonviolence. We have a tendency to somewhat identify nonviolence as being freedom from some physical activity. But here we find a much broader definition of nonviolence, that people are suffering, and to give them something that increases their suffering is called violence. In other words, if someone is sick and you tell them they're okay, that's violence, because you're supposed to help them if you can. So the philosophies, humanitarian programs that go on in the name of self and helping others, are in one sense just allowing people to continue their suffering with the idea that they're getting over their suffering. In other words, if you present something that is not actually helpful, then also you're causing violence to others. Interesting definition. So real nonviolence means to give people the means to free themselves from their suffering, or free themselves from the entanglement of the material energy. That's real nonviolence. Why? Because material world means to suffer. Try to understand the principle. To me, be in a material world means to suffer. So anyone, if someone is increasing one's material life, then you're increasing a person's suffering. So ultimately, in the name of doing good to others, one is actually not causing more harm, because they're ignorant about how to help other people. They're suffering, and they think that by creating some kind of program for material happiness, that will relieve a person's suffering, but not. Of course, we can take nonviolence in its basic understanding, and that nonviolence means not to put another person in distress. So how can you put a person in distress? There's three ways of putting a person in distress. By your words, by your actions, and by not acting properly. So in one sense, just like if you were supposed to say, in other words, the negative or the non-action is a form of non-violence. Just like if you don't do something that's expected of you and that causes someone to be angry with you, that's violence. And if you do something that's wrong, that's violence. Or if you say something that's wrong, that's violence. And of course, if you create some physical pain, that's the clear understanding of violence. So violence can take its different forms. Of course, sometimes we say that words are even more piercing than actions. Sometimes we see people commit suicide, not so much because of physical pain, but because of mental pain or emotional pain. Emotional and mental pain is more painful than physical pain. Somehow people can tolerate physical pain, but emotional and mental pain sometimes causes such distress that people just want to commit suicide. They can't even live for another second. It becomes so much enwrapped in that pain. So to do something to cause people to enter into that state of suffering is a form of violence. So we have to be very careful. Therefore, Prabhupada says here, the best way to relieve a person's to free him from suffering is to enlighten him in devotion. In other words, to give him knowledge. Krishna consciousness is a process of giving knowledge. Sometimes people in our other religious groups, they criticize us. What are you doing to help society? Feeding the poor, clothing the needy, or housing the homeless, stand up for tenants' rights, clean the river, march against, high rent. All these things. But, that's nice, and we don't criticize people for doing that. But ultimately, if you want to solve a person's problem, you give him knowledge where he can solve his own problems. People suffer. Why? Why do people suffer? Because they're in ignorance. Ignorance is the cause of suffering. Knowledge is the cause of freedom. So to distribute transcendental knowledge is actually the best welfare work you can do for society. Therefore, when people sometimes say to us, why aren't you doing, the helps that we are? We're giving the people a chance to ultimately solve their own problems. When you're Krishna conscious, you have no more problems. It's like one of the biggest problems in the world is what? The drug problem. But as soon as you become a devotee, no drugs. Right? Immediately the drug problem's over. Right? It's gone. Prabhupada said they were giving us some credits. Says the Krishna conscious movement is one of the most successful drug rehabilitation programs in the world. You want to become a devotee, then there's no drugs. Boss, stop. So we've solved the drug problem, the alcoholic problem, the the illicit sex problems, the violence problems, all problems are solved, these major problems are solved simply by becoming a devotee. Jai Shishu Kishore Kishore Kishore. So real non-violence means to distribute transcendental knowledge. By giving to a person a transcendental knowledge, they can free themselves from their own suffering and ultimately come to the platform of happiness. Okay, so last night we only talked about humility. Tonight we're going to try and do a few more. So that was non-violence. Any questions or comments on nonviolence before we go on to the next? Yes.
Is that definition, does it coincide, or is it the same as the word ahimsa?
Ahimsa means nonviolence. Mm. Yes, that's the word meaning. Let's see how it's translated. Yeah, ahimsa. Amandhitvam adambhitvam ahimsam shanti arjavam. So the word is ahimsa.
My question is, the one definition that I learned was that ahimsa means aggressive nonviolence. And does that have any place in there at all?
What does mean aggressive nonviolence? I don't really have any familiarity with the term aggressive nonviolence. Nonviolence is nonviolence.
He did, and what Gandhi had did was aggressive nonviolence, but actually going out, marching for peace and stuff. I don't know if it's true or not. That's the main thing.
Well, that's a protest against violence. I mean, there's different ways to protest against violence. That's one of the ways. Whether if you do it actively and call it aggressive, or you do it by writing it down on paper, it's still an active effort to counteract violence. It's just a term. Okay, any questions on nonviolence? Okay, we'll go on to the next one. The next one is Shanti. K-S-A-N-T-I-H. Shanti means tolerance. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. If one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and much dishonor for others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who, only 5 years old, was engaged in cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him in so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated him. So there may be many impediments to making advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our program with determination. So here, tolerance. Intolerance is one of the most essential qualities for engaging in Krishna consciousness. As Srila Prabhupada says, there will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. Even within the family, family members don't appreciate, friends don't understand, society criticizes, and sometimes even your best friends cannot understand. So one has to tolerate. Actually, one cannot live unless they are tolerant. Every day, we have to tolerate. We have to tolerate people around us, events around us, the weather, so many things. We have to tolerate our own body. Sometimes our body is full of pain and suffering. We have to tolerate that. In other words, we have to go on with our goal in life, but at the same time be tolerant of those things that are disturbing and sometimes opposed to devotional life. So tolerance is so essential for making a spiritual master advancement. One who cannot tolerate cannot practice devotional service. It's not possible. And tolerance, Lord Chaitanya gave the definition, trinadapi sunichena tayor iva suhishnuna, that humility like a grass and tolerant like a tree. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he expanded on this definition of tolerance like a tree. He said, it's, what is a tree? A tree is a living entity who stands out in the cold, in the wintertime. It must tolerate severe cold sometimes. And then in the summertime, severe heat. The sun is beating down on it. But at the same time, it's giving shade to other living entities. So many animals, birds and other animals, make their home in the tree. They cut holes in it. They eat it. Tree doesn't protest. People want firewood, so they cut the tree branches down. Somebody wants a house, so they cut the tree down. Tree doesn't tolerate, doesn't say anything. So Lord Chaitanya used the example of a tree for the epitome of tolerance, but at the same time he said that a devotee has to be more tolerant than a tree. It's quite a tall order when you think about it, but that's actually the standard for devotional service, because there will be so many difficulties in spiritual life. But if you know what's right, then you go on doing that and tolerating whatever else is there. And by tolerance, we develop a sense of determination in our Krishna consciousness. It's like one of the things that I always find myself being constantly put with when I travel is crying babies. One of the most disturbing sounds is children crying. Because when children cry, what do they cry? Their cry is like pain. So it's another living entity screaming out in pain. You know, either hungry or they're disturbed or some bugs are biting them. Nobody even knows why they're crying. But they're crying. When I was on the plane coming back from London, you know, just a few seats up from me, there was this baby. And the mother was, you know, trying her best to keep the baby quiet. And everybody in the plane was getting upset. You know, they were doing their best to tolerate it. But this mother, the mother was such anxiety. You know, it wasn't like the baby was hungry. If you take a 3-month-year-old baby and you put him in a plane 10,000, you know, feet in the air, or however how high you fly, 38,000 feet. You know, it's quite unnatural for a 3-month-old baby to be in a jet, you know, it's gonna cry. Just being in that atmosphere. And so, it's like that. What can you do? Fortunately, I had my earplugs with me. But still, you know, you find that you have to tolerate. You know, what can you do? So tolerance is, we have to tolerate, and otherwise we can't perform devotional service. And so Prabhupada uses the example of Prahlad Maharaj, that his tolerance was so much so that his father tried to kill him. He tolerated it, and at the same time he prayed for the deliverance of his father, not considering his father at all someone who was his enemy. Haridas Thakur was beaten 22 marketplaces. He chanted the holy names of the Lord, and he tolerated it. Lord Jesus Christ was killed. He tolerated it. And at the same time, he prayed for his executioner's deliverance. So you find that this quality of tolerance is one of the most essential principles. We live in association with devotees. We have to tolerate each other sometimes. You know, we don't like what some people do or say, or we just don't even like the way somebody looks. We look at somebody and say, "Ugh, you know, why are you looking like that? Your presence is disturbing my happiness." Right? We think we're the Lord of all we survey, and if somebody comes and disturbs us, and all of a sudden, you know, our happiness is somewhat interfered with. We have to tolerate. So this quality of tolerance is essential. Okay, any questions on tolerance? Yes?
Can you make a connection between... It is said that a person who likes to expose himself to being indecent exposure and all that sort of thing in life, that the karmic reaction to that is that they become trees. Now, the trees lesson personifies tolerance. Can you explain the
tree is forced to be tolerant.
Yes. Now, what's the connection between the person, the karmic reaction of a person who has to expose themselves all the time, you know, like appears naked and all that, and the karma being a tree, which is the karma of tolerance, the enforced tolerance. How does that connect? If you
connect those two things?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're connectable.
Why does a person who...
It doesn't mean that all trees have been, you know, naked babas in their last life. Or rainbow people in a rainbow gathering. It just means that if you want... And the human society means to cover. And if you don't, you're actually not understanding the value of having a human body, so you get a tree. If you want to exhibit that type of way of living, then be a tree. And no one, you won't disturb anyone then. The idea of if you walk around naked, you disturb a lot of people. But if you do it as a tree, then nobody's disturbed. So the idea is you get the facility to do that without disturbing anybody. Well, we find that in nature, if you study nature, you'll find that there are good qualities in nature. So a tree's good quality, it's its tolerance. You can learn tolerance from a tree. You can learn faithfulness from a dog. You can learn determination from maybe a squirrel. You know, each animal has an element that is a quality that one can pick up on. So a tree's good quality is its tolerance. But it's not that you have to become a tree to be tolerant. No one glorifies a tree for being tolerant. The tree is the example of tolerance, that's all. If a human being becomes tolerant, it becomes glorifiable. If a tree becomes tolerant, he's a tree. Therefore he is tolerant because he's a tree. He can't protest. Okay.
That to me, Swami, part of the Gita is like the quality of a tree. intrinsic quality is tolerance.
Yes.
Like tree is born and grows with a tolerance part.
Yes.
So part of the Gita actually, it says over and over that you should look at your intrinsic qualities. See, tolerance, faith, duty, those are your intrinsic, like those are qualities you are, that's your nature you are born with.
Well, you have to develop them.
Well, I think people cover them up too much. See, they put other layers, then yeah. You don't know what is deep.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah.
Tolerance is the quality of the soul. Humility is the quality of the soul. Nonviolence is the quality of the soul. Pridelessness is the quality of the soul. And the soul is covered by the layers of the material body. We're not interested in developing material tolerance and material pridelessness, because all that does is that facilitates our ascent into the material energy. People become tolerant in this material world because they want something material. So they have to tolerate, and if they sit in traffic for 2 hours in the morning, you know, in their cars, tolerating all the living and sitting on the freeway, to go to work. So they want money to go to work, so they tolerate going to work. But that's tolerance in the mode of ignorance. It's not really glorifiable. We consider that a form of stupidity. It's just the opposite. It's tolerance, but it's for the wrong reason. That's all. It is tolerance, but it's for the wrong reason. Therefore, if you do something for the wrong reason, you can't be glorified for that quality.
Yeah, we tell people, see, the simpler way in other places too, one has to kind of try to think in that modality. We say, let us say, I will give you an example, you come to the temple. We say, as soon as you enter the door, you see everyone like Krishna. You see, try it. I mean, may not work first time, second time, third time, but slowly you start developing that, you know, the feeling, and then maybe outside some of it.
Yeah, two things. You have to try to understand things theoretically, and then you also have to purify your consciousness. Because once you purify your consciousness, then you will see everyone is spirit, part of Krishna. But theoretically, in the meantime, until you get there, you have to think like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
Otherwise, if you wait till you get there, you may never get there.
That's right.
So we have to treat each other as a spirit soul, not just a body. Okay. Any more questions on tonight? We covered nonviolence and tolerance. Any more points, questions on this? Yes?
How far do you tolerate, you know, somebody's just beaten down on you or something? When do you say, okay, that's enough? I mean,
well,
situation.
Lord Chaitanya said you have to be more tolerant than the tree, but the thing is, you have to understand what is real tolerance. You don't tolerate something that is against your spiritual life. In other words, if someone is trying to drag you into material sense gratification, it's not that you tolerate that and go along with it. You say, no, you're taking me to the path of hell. So you don't tolerate things, but you don't react to them in the same way that they're being delivered to you. You have to respectfully and humbly use your intelligence to discriminate between what is good for your spiritual life and what is not. You don't tolerate things that are not good for your spiritual life. You reject them. That's on one platform. On the higher platform, there's nothing that's against your spiritual life. But when you get to that platform, you'll know. one who's on that platform, they can tolerate anything, because they see everything as being coming from Krishna to be used in Krishna's service, even Maya. But don't act on that platform unless you're on that platform. Better to discriminate. Therefore, it's explained that in order to make advancement in spiritual life, one must accept the principle of accepting things favorable for devotional service and rejecting things which are unfavorable. So one has to know what is favorable and what is unfavorable. So we don't tolerate the unfavorable things, we reject them. Is that clear? So we have to have, you have to develop that discrimination. Okay, let's see. We're down to about a minute left. Last comment, question? So, okay, so tomorrow we'll go on with the 20 qualities which are necessary, which are considered knowledge. And tomorrow we'll begin with simplicity and go on. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.